Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 51 of Season 5 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Hal Bryan of the Rocketeer Minute. Welcome to the show, Hal.
Oh, thanks, Rob. It's fun to be here. It's a great way to do this, and it's a good excuse to go back and watch that movie again.
There you go. I'm glad. Do you want to actually tell everyone maybe your history with this movie? Do you remember when you first saw it? Any other thoughts about the movie in general?
Let's see. I was certainly stoked for it because, I saw the first Die Hard, I think, opening day in the theater and things like that. And so I heard there was a sequel coming, and then especially found that it had an aviation angle. Really, really excited about it. I would have also seen it on opening day. And I do remember at the time that it was shooting, they actually filmed all the, not maybe not all, but they filmed a bunch of the airport exteriors at a place called Moses Lake, Washington, which was, at the time, was a 20-minute flight by small airplane from where I was living and working and flying. So you'd hear about a movie being shot over there and something going on, and there were rumors, oh, maybe it's Die Hard. We flew over the place a couple of times, but you never really saw anything. And I should have made a better effort at the time to go out there and, really try to watch, but it was just something that we were aware of was happening, quote unquote, in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I've told the story to my listener, to other listeners before, but I also had a touch with Die Hard 2 when it was being filmed. I mean, I grew up in Michigan. So I remember that a friend of mine and I saw in the newspaper that they were looking for extras to be in Die Hard 2, and they were filming in the Upper Peninsula or near the Upper Peninsula. I don't even remember where it was specifically. And, they said, anyone come, it's an all night shoot, we'll choose who we're going to use and stuff like that. And me and my friend really, really wanted to go. And at this point, I can't remember the reason why it didn't work out, but we never went, and that's one of the things that I still kick myself to this day. Like I've said this before, if I had a time machine, one of the things that I would do is go back to my 16-year-old self in 1990 and say, doesn't matter what's going on this day, get in the car, go up there so that exactly. You'll be actually, even if it's just seeing me somewhere in the background, because from what I understand, it's the scene at the end when the planes are landing, those were the scenes that they were filming. So it was like, so I would have probably been, dressed up as a fireman or a paramedic or something like that, at the time. But whatever, there are these things that you just can't redo or undo or anything like that. And, it would have been great. But instead, 33 years later, I'm sitting here talking about this movie 1 minute at a time. So why not? Wouldn't it be cooler? Wouldn't it be cooler if I could say, hey, there's me, but.
Yes. And in this minute, look really closely in the lower left corner of the screen.
There you go.
That would be the great kind of thing to be able to do with the time machine. I mean, let somebody else worry about killing Hitler and all that sort
that's
of thing.
That's right. Exactly.
I just want to go make this little change. It's not going to have any major effect.
It will, because it will make a change, because the guy who actually played the extra they would have given me, his life would have been changed. And he would have been like,
that's true.
Damn, I was supposed to be that extra in the movie. I don't know why they let this other guy take it instead. So,
And then he buys a time machine and everything just goes out of control from there.
That's actually, there we go. We have a great idea for a movie. People just keep using time machines to keep changing, these little minor things that keep happening. Basically struggling against one another in order to be an extra in a movie. There you go.
An infinite paradox.
Yeah, why not? Sounds good to me.
There you go.
That's right. Me too. So basically, minute 51 begins with Barnes giving a report and ends with Khan giving an update. We ended things on Friday with, Holly was on the plane with Thornburg. He was trying to butter her up a little bit and didn't really work. And then she gets offered some champagne. And then we get a fraction of a second of, Barnes sitting there getting ready to give some sort of report on a walkie-talkie. And that's where this minute begins. So we have Barnes is sitting on the slidewalk or near the slidewalk, and he's getting his arm bandaged by John, which is very strange. I saw that and I'm like, huh? Why is John bandaging his arm? And Barnes starts talking and says, me? Yeah, I live. But Lorenzo's SWAT team is dead. And the antenna array is gone. So, like, what do you think? Why do you think, we have all these paramedics walking around, and we saw them, take the paddles off of one of the bodies, on Friday and stuff like that. And here, they've wrangled John in to be I guess a little bit of a medic.
Right. Yeah, that struck me as odd as well. But it's I part of me thinks they wanted to give give Bruce Willis a little bit of business, something to do. It probably needed to have a reason for him sitting there, and it would be weird to try to block that by squeezing a paramedic in between them to actually do the bandaging. But
Right.
boy, that was there's a lot of holes in this movie.
Oh yeah, we're going to talk about
Imperfection
some
for the
later this week.
diehard
That's
series.
actually why you're here, to talk about some of the holes later this week, because you are an
Sure.
aviation expert. But we'll get there. We're not going to jump ahead. We'll get there. We'll get there.
One hole at a time.
Yes, that's correct. No, it's just very funny that, maybe they just were saying, okay, who here has some sort of medical experience? And John goes, hey, I've wrapped up some of the scum that I've been beating up over the years. So, I know how to
Right.
take care
Yeah.
of glass shards, that have cut Barnes's arm. I don't know.
Well, and he's bandaged his own feet. He's got his background there,
No,
so
but that was, but there he was, using a t-shirt as opposed to, having to use
true.
anything else. So here, actually, maybe this is a t-shirt. Is it possible that he's wrapping a t-shirt around his arm? That would be
Could be.
perfect.
He just had a spare t-shirt.
That's right. Who knows? You never really know. But I mean, again, I like the way that they're giving us some exposition here. Just having Barnes explain, his situation, explaining that the SWAT team, it doesn't matter, they're completely dead. There's no, and the antenna array is completely blown up, even though we've seen all this, but now they've basically
Right.
recapped it for anybody who's just joining at minute 51. Now you get this quick recap of what's going on.
Exactly. Well, and it's they're making it clear that that everybody in the scene who needs to know, or even off camera outside of the scene, everybody who needs to know what's happened is now up to speed. You know, that it's you hate to see some sort of huge thing happen and then sort of cut back to the principals and say, well, why aren't they talking about this? Why didn't he tell them what just happened?
Exactly. And I'm trying to figure out that this must be a cell phone that he's talking on. It's a very early version of a cell phone from 1990. I'm sure you remember, just like I do, that in 1990 most people did not have cell phones. I
Absolutely.
think I got a cell phone maybe in 97 or 98. I think that was like the first, and there weren't that many people using cell phones at the time.
Right. Yeah, that
It was
was.
still in its infancy for mass use. Obviously, we know that cell phone started in the 70s, and then they had car phones. The 80s was, you can see tons of 80s movies, where you have rich people, with car phones.
Right. Well, back in my in fact, right about the time of this movie, and call it, maybe give or take a year on either side, but certainly that era of my life, I was working in law enforcement, and our entire police department had a single cell phone,
Okay,
and
there you go.
it was a giant sort of somewhere between a briefcase and a suitcase, and then had a coiled handset attached to it,
That
and whoever was
sounds like
shift
something they'd use in
supervisor.
James Bond. You
Yeah, it
have
was
that.
very much so. Felt like a Bond villain, which is a
Yes.
weird way to feel when you're supposed to be the good guy.
That's true. That's true. So in other words, you're saying that the cell phone that Barnes is using here is a little smaller.
A little bit smaller. Yeah, there is no, 50-pound suitcase attached to it.
That's right. Hey, if it works, why not? There's certain things that
Absolutely.
and that's one of the things I love about looking at movies from I guess from a different era, where when it's an era that we're still familiar with. I'm not talking about like seeing things from the 40s or 50s where, we don't really have as much of an idea of what's going on, what was going on, and how things were being done. But you know, something
Right.
within our I guess adolescent and above timeline, that type of thing.
Right. Because it reminds us how much things have changed.
Oh yeah,
Because,
for sure.
you know, this doesn't, this movie doesn't feel like, what did you say, 33 years ago?
Yeah,
Is that,
does not feel
that
that.
makes me 55, which at the time we're recording this, I just turned about a week ago.
All right, I'm
And
49, so it's
so, yeah, we're in that same neighborhood.
exactly.
And that none of that seems possible to me. There's no
Correct.
way that 1990 was 33 years
That's
ago,
correct. I
et cetera, et cetera.
what always gets me is I think about it and I say, okay, so 33 years ago was Die Hard. Now, if you think 33 years before Die Hard 2, okay, so that was the year of that was 1957. So that was the Bridge on the River Kwai,
Right.
12 Angry Men, Witness of the Prosecution, all those movies. And I think to myself, okay, the distance between us now and Die Hard 2 is the same distance that people looked at from Die Hard 2 backwards. And that just blows my mind whenever I think about that type of stuff.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I was just reminiscing with a friend of mine on the 40th anniversary of the release of Return of the Jedi, which was
Okay.
May 25th
Right.
of 83. And he and I were there at 3 in the morning together. And the midnight show sold out instantly. We got our tickets to the next one at 3. And then it hit me that that was closer to World War II
That's right.
than now.
That's right. That was
And how is
as
that
you said
even
that, I was just thinking to
remotely
myself,
possible?
exactly the same thing. It's just amazing to when you look back at how that all moves along. But we're all still here to talk about it, so I guess that's a good thing.
Here.
That's it. That's all there really is. So all right, so John finishes bandaging, and as he's bandaging, we hear like this big beeping sound. And John starts looking around, trying to figure out where the beeping sound is. And I don't know if you noticed this, but he doesn't even finish bandaging up Barnes. He's about to like tie a knot in the bandage on Barnes, and he just leaves it and gets up.
He just kind of lets it go. I hadn't noticed that.
Well, maybe he wants him to look like a mummy, from Abbott and Costello and the Mummy or something like that,
Right. Or maybe he's trying to send a message that with all these paramedics around, maybe one of them could have done
That's
this.
right. Get someone a little more experienced to do this for you.
Right.
And then John gets up and he walks towards the you see all these payphones on the wall, and one of them he walks by and you can see tons of blood all over it.
Yes.
No one decided. I mean, they're dealing with the bodies, I understand, but they did have, I guess, wipes at the time. You can start cleaning it up a little bit. I don't know.
Right.
And
But it's interesting
and
that
the phones are in
most of the
plastic
handsets are
bags.
still,
That's right.
yeah, they're still shrink wrapped, exactly.
That's right. And then John leans over to the body on the ground. As I mean, it's actually very funny. If you look, you see the paramedic is getting ready to put the guy in a body bag, but the paramedic is really far away. Like John gets is even closer to the body than the paramedic is, and basically John's theoretically helping the paramedic because he flips the body over and lands him in the body bag, and you can see that that's
Right.
actually Shockley, who is the one terrorist that in this entire movie that John does not kill.
Interesting. I hadn't made that connection.
I don't know if that's on purpose, but whatever. And now, do you
Right.
know the guy who plays Shockley? It's
Oh, can't place him.
Mark Boone Jr. You can't place him because he looks so different from what you normally would know him from. Have you seen Memento?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so he plays
That's
the
him.
clerk, the clerk at the motel. Okay, he's been in
Yeah.
Sons of Anarchy and stuff like that. You always see him with this like really big beard and
Right.
lots of like hair going all over the place. Like shocking gray hair all over the place and stuff like that. And this is just 9 years before. Oh, this is 10 years before Memento. And he looks very different because he's clean
He looks
shaven
completely.
and stuff like that. I mean, when we saw him get killed, I think 2 weeks ago, so you could tell that it's him. Here, it's a little difficult to tell completely that it's him, but you see that he's got blood on his face also.
Right. Well, I never would have made that connection. That's amazing.
Well, when I was starting to do research on this movie and I saw that he's in this movie, I'm like, I don't remember him being here because I didn't
Right.
remember a guy who looks like Mark Boone Jr. there. And and again, Mark, if you're listening, I've reached out to you. I would love to have you on, and on the show to talk about what you did in the movie. So, and any of the other people who played any of the characters, I've reached out to many of you. Feel free to get in touch with me if you want. I'd love to hear your thoughts on things. And John then, as he's turning the body over, he takes out a walkie-talkie, from, I guess, a pouch or a pocket or something like that. And he basically then, we hear in the background, we hear Barnes say, "Didn't you see it? I'm tired of looking for a new miracle," which doesn't really make any sense. I don't know what his new miracle is. And then you hear Barnes continue and he says, "Just hold a minute. No, I'll be right back." And then you hear, "Just hold a second. Something's going on here." Yeah. Just hold on for a minute. Now, these are things that if you're not looking at the transcript of the, the subtitles, you'll never, you
Right.
can't really hear it. When you're looking, like when I did my research for this, I could hear it, but it wasn't something that you even pay attention to when you're normally doing it.
Right. You're just sort of aware that there's dialogue, there's radio chatter,
Yeah,
and you don't pay too
exactly.
much attention to
And
it.
you're not paying any attention to it because it's actually in the background. It's not even this radio that John is holding.
Right.
And then the shot changes and we're back in the church. And we then hear we see Garber say, "I say again, Annex team, give us a sit rep. Annex team, come in, do you copy?" And then it goes back to John with Barnes standing next to him. And we once again hear garbly goo. You can't really tell anything that's being said because obviously it's all being scrambled. And then basically John goes, "It's got some kind of scramble on it. Can you do anything with it?" And it continues to make all these screeching sounds and stuff like that. And John hands it over to Barnes, who starts playing with it. And then he responds and says, "No, this scramble mode must activate on this code panel. Even if we scan their frequency, we can't listen in. These guys are pros." Now, first of all, aren't they scanning their frequency right now?
That's what it, yeah,
He's
I think that's by definition what's happening.
exactly. He goes, "Even if we're scanning their frequency, but hello, you're listening to it. You are scanning their frequency. You can't understand what they're saying because of the fact that it's scrambled."
Exactly.
Now, what do you know about scramblers? Do you know anything about them?
Very, very little. I think the only sort of tenuous sort of thread connection I can come up with is that again, I mentioned my law enforcement days, and about toward the end of my career, a lot of departments we never did, but a lot of I said the end of the law enforcement phase of my career, a lot of departments were going to I don't know, say somewhere between scrambled or encrypted would be the right term,
Right, I think today we would
radio
use the word
usage.
encrypted. I don't know if that, do you think they used the
Right.
word encrypted,
Yeah.
33, 35 years ago? I don't know.
Probably not. Although, I mean, you certainly heard it in terms of code breaking and things like that, and World War II and beyond. But the big reason was that you have so many people out there with police band scanners that want to listen in, and some departments say, you know what, these communications need to be secure. We can't just be broadcasting so everybody can hear. So they would switch that. At my department, we had two tactical frequencies that we could switch to for that weren't published. So it's not like they were scrambled or encrypted. If somebody happened to figure out what the number was, they could hear it. But basically, when you bought a scanner back then and say, "Here's all the police frequencies," these two frequencies wouldn't be listed. So we would call each other and say, "Go to TAC one, go to TAC two," and then we could talk directly without, if we needed to be discreet about something. But no scrambling per se.
Right. Okay. Now, do you know when the first voice scramblers were invented? Approximately.
I don't.
Approximately. So
No idea.
it was invented by Bell Labs right before World War II. And
Oh,
they
terrific.
had sets that consisted of electronics that could mix two signals or alternatively subtract one signal back out again. And the two signals were done via with a telephone and a record player. And then you'd
Oh,
have on
no.
the other side a matching pair of records that each contain the same recording of the noise. You know, and so they would play the recording into the telephone, and then the mix signal was sent over the wire, and then the noise was then taken out at the far end using the matching record, and therefore it would then you'd be able to hear what was being said. And anyone who's trying to listen in will just hear like a noisy signal because they would not be able to understand the voice. I mean, this is it's amazing that they had that type of technology back then.
It really is. That's mind blowing. Yeah, we're using the record player and everything. I'd never heard that before.
That's right. This is stuff that that like Winston Churchill and FDR were talking this way,
Right.
you know, during World War II, so that nobody could understand what they were doing. There were actually a few times that the Germans intercepted and were able to unscramble the what they had. You know, so now it's I mean, to me, it's always been fascinating, especially because I always think of this movie when I think of, you know, Scramblers. Because I mean, I think that's one of the mistakes they made in the first movie, the first Die Hard, where they didn't have any type of scrambler. So they decided that in this one, they're going to go one step further and make it that you can't really hear what he's saying, hear what they're saying. You know, the first one
Right.
was a, was was a, was too much of a, an open. It was an open mic for anybody to listen in on, and deal with that.
Exactly. Well, and you wonder, did the terrorists in this movie learn anything? Because they're aware of what happened at Nakatomi, and McClane is
Well,
even, you know,
we'll get
kind
there
of a
later this
celebrity.
week. You're
Oh,
jumping ahead again.
jumping ahead.
We'll
That
get there
happens. I
later
do
this
that.
week. That's okay. We're allowed. We've, you know, as much as we try to look at this minute in a vacuum, we know that that's impossible. There are other things that are going around and whatever. So, you know, but it's later this week. So, you know, I implore you to try to just hold off a little bit.
I will do it.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. And then Barnes says to John, "These guys are pros." And John goes, "So are you. Break the code. I want to hear what those bastards are saying to each other." You know,
And
so
what makes him a pro? It's just,
he's the chief engineer of the control tower, you know.
yeah, that doesn't really make you a code breaker. They don't teach that, I don't think.
Well,
Maybe.
maybe John's saying that you're more of a pro than I am.
Well, that's fair.
I can barely, you know, bandage your arm. I mean, if you look at Barnes's arm when they're talking about it, you see the bandage is not tied up. So it's like hanging over the side, you know, so
Right.
it shows that John is not good at that, and he thinks that Barnes is good at this. I mean, we know that Barnes is somewhat of a technical whiz, you know, because he was gonna somehow you know, tap into to the annex, but you know, we never got to see that, so whatever. And then I love his response because Barnes then says, "This is a 10-digit control panel, 6-digit readout. Hell, that could be a million combinations. Next time you kill one of these guys, get him to enter the code first."
Right. Yeah, that was a great line. And we're
it's a
just,
great line. It's a stupid thing to say, but it's very funny.
right. Well, and it's, you know, there's no PTSD at this point. There's no shock on McClane's part. You know, yeah, he just killed a guy. It's just, you know, it's another day at the office.
Correct.
Although, and
Well, it's another
Barnes
Christmas at
is
the
sort
office.
of, yeah, and Barnes is just sort of rolling with it, saying, well, when this guy's around, people just keep dying, and you
That's
know,
right.
next time, get him to enter the code first.
That's right. I'm about to shoot you. Enter the code, please. You know,
Right.
So I mean, I was thinking about it. You know, he mentions the fact that it's a 10-digit code with a 6-digit readout, and I was trying to think of how is that connected to what, you know, to today. And you know, a lot of times when you're going in onto a website or you have to get in some, you know, they now have the mobile pins, you know, where you need to put either 4 or 6 digits in,
Sure.
you know, where they'll send you something to your cell phone and say, okay, you know, in order to go to the next stage, push, you know, put in your 6-digit code and stuff like that. You know, the one that they give you each time, you know, it's a randomly done one because, you know, they realize that you can't let people choose their own.
Right.
you know,
Yeah,
that
exactly.
we all know that from Seinfeld, Bosco.
Bosco.
What do you think are the most popular pins when they let people choose them on their own? If you're dealing with either a four digit or a six digit.
I would guess, and this is just a guess, I suspect that 40 is up there, as is, 1234, maybe 4231.
Okay, well, the first two are there, definitely. 1234 and 0000. Again, 1234, we'll go back to, the Spaceballs comment, about the code for the air, and also the code on President Scrooge's luggage. Yeah, both of those. Yes. So the 10 most popular four-digit pins are 1234, 0000, 2580. I don't know why. That one I can't figure out why that would be at. 1111, 5555, 5683. Again, I don't know why that would be there. 0852, 2222, 1212. That one sort of makes sense. I think maybe because of, you have the phone number 555-1212.
Right.
And the last one baffles me the most, 1998. I don't know why.
Really? 1998.
Like, why would people, like, what happened in 1998 that that's the main reason that people would use that as a four-digit PIN?
Yeah, was that a big year for apparently so many people? Interesting. You mentioned 555-1212. When's the last time you called information?
Oh, I
don't
know.
There's a generation of people out there listening that have no idea what we're talking about.
That's right. It's been years, if not decades. Yeah. But I know the number still.
It is
because I did. It came up, I think, last season we were talking about it. Where that is one of the only, I think it's maybe it's a 1-800 number that's still, no, it was because we were talking about I know what we're talking about. We're talking about how in movies, most movies, it's the numbers start with 555, and 555-1212 is the one number that is completely designated that nobody else can use, in real life, not just in movies. That's where we were talking about it. Okay, so what about six-digit pins? Any guesses on that, of what the 10 most popular six-digit pins are?
Well, is one of them 1234-56?
Yes.
Okay, then I'm feeling good about myself. How about 6 zeros?
Yes. Anything else? I know you can get some more. No, you're going in the right direction now. I think you're going to get most of these.
Six ones?
Yes.
Okay.
Think back to some of the four-digit ones. I'll give you a hint to use that.
Boy. I mean, I'm just thinking six of any digit or
okay.
Counting
the
down
only other digit, there you go. The only other digit that has the six digits of it is 666666. And then you got the other one right. You said counting back from six. So 654321. Gotcha. Okay. In addition, you have 123123. I guess that's was it red light, green light, 123?
Something like that.
121212, 112233, 789456, which is actually a clever one. That one's and then the final one, another one that I have no idea why it fits in here, 159753. Oh, actually it's diagonal. That's what it is. It's making an X. On the phone pad, 159753. Yeah. The scene changes and we're back in the church again. John, first of all, beforehand, John looks a little frustrated that they're not able to do anything. But then, we're back in the church and we see one of the guys walking down the stairs. That's actually Khan. Khan! And it's played by an actor named Tom Verica. This is the second time we see him in the movie. We saw him at the beginning. He was one of the two guys who came to the church at the beginning and took over the church basically by killing killing what my guest of that week referred to, who you referred to as Matlock. So Tom Verica has 61 IMDb credits. And the one for me that always jumps out, I'm a big fan, as is, Jim O'Kane, who was on last week, and you might be too, of the miniseries From the Earth to the Moon.
Oh, so, absolutely.
Okay, so he was in From the Earth to the Moon. He played Dick Gordon in three episodes. Dick Gordon was one of the guys on the on Apollo 12. So yeah, like when
Oh, that's a
again
good spot.
when I was doing when I was doing research at the beginning and I saw some of these names, I was like, I recognize those names. It was like, and now I'm, now we actually get him actually say something in this movie, because in the first scene he didn't say anything. But in this minute we only get to hear him say one word and he goes, "Sir." That's it. He gets cut off. In order to find out what else he says, we'll have to come back tomorrow for that. So, Hal, do you have anything else for this minute before we get into the script?
No, I don't think so. I think I think we've covered it, and as you said, there's plenty to talk about over through this week. So
Oh, for
I'll
sure.
try to pace myself and not jump ahead.
All right, great. So the script is pretty much the same as what happens in the movie, but as always, I love the descriptive aspect of it. So Barnes gives his report, and then it says no, and then it says McClane is doing a damn decent field dressing on Barnes. So you see, they get that straight from the script, and then it says an eerie alien type voice makes them both jump. McClane raises his gun. It's coming from a transceiver beside one of the dead men. Curious, Barnes slides over, picks it up, listens with McClane to the garbled, spine-chilling noise, and then it jumps to the church. We hear, we see Garber, say his lines, looking at Stewart concerned, and then it goes back to the annex where it says, "Here, Garber no longer sounds human," and McClane goes, "What?" And Barnes goes, "Some kind of scrambler. So even if we scan their frequency, we can't listen in. Descramble mode must activate on this code panel." Almost admiringly, "These guys are pros." So McClane then says to him, "So are you, break the code." And then Barnes goes, "Eight numbers. That's 8 times 7 times 6 times thinking 40,320 possible combinations. Next time you kill one of these guys, get them to enter the code first." So, as I remember learning as a kid, if you want to find out the maximum number of something, if you have like a code or the certain number of people, how can you arrange them in an order or anything like that? So you just multiply the number by the next number down, next number down, and all that. So it's 8 times 7 times 6, So eventually that does get to 40,000. But had they actually done it from 10, which is what theoretically they should be doing, so
Sure.
10 is actually gets to 1 million, it's, or it's over 1 million, the number that you would get with that. So, I like the fact that in the movie they actually go that far, and it would be silly to have them say show Barnes, using his fingers counting 8 times 7 times 6 times 5.
Right.
Would have been a
Yeah, that
little
would slow it
strange.
down a little.
It would slow down a little
Yeah.
bit, and it would make us all feel really stupid by him doing it that way. So.
Any guesses why it was 8 in the script and 6 in the film?
Maybe D'Souza just only could do the math for 8. I don't know. That would be my guess. This is as
Good a
close as I
reason as
can get.
any.
Exactly. You have any thoughts as to why?
I think, as you said, just trying to, maybe trying to keep it simple. If they're going to streamline the dialogue, they might as well
That's right. I
shorten the
remember. I
numbers
remember
too.
in school they always taught us, kiss. Keep it
Keep
simple.
it
Keep it
simple.
simple, stupid. There you
Exactly.
go.
I wonder too if it, the I'm scrubbing back through the minute. If the it would have been that much more complex to actually show where you're going to put in, or show this readout where you're going to put in these 8 digits.
Well, at second 34,
So,
we can see part of it, but you know what?
yeah.
There's even more buttons than that. I mean, they have 16 buttons on the,
Yeah, they do.
so I don't really know how that works.
Yeah. That looks like a, I mean, a fairly typical handheld, like it might even be an air aviation transceiver.
It's a
And
Kenwood.
so you'd
I mean,
have.
we can see the serial number. It's a Kenwood TH45AT. I you know, I don't really know what that is. Maybe it is a receiver, like you said, an aviation receiver. I don't know, but
It's
again,
a it's
it's funny that he says, that it's got, 10 digit options for six, six digit readout, And you know, they
Right.
show us that there's a lot more than that. So I don't
Well,
know.
there's multiple buttons, but I'm wondering if they're talking about the actual LCD display at the top, because in other words, where you'd see the numbers, not where you'd actually type the numbers, because it looks that's because I'm looking at a picture of one now, and I say there's
It's known as a Kenwood Trio.
I can't quite see what the other
Oh wow,
digits
you
are.
can
It's got
actually
a
see, but you can see on well in the one that I found here, you can see that they have 1 through 9, and then asterisk 0, and then pound, and then you have
Right.
ABCD. So that actually makes sense. Okay, that explains why, you know, it's not 16 buttons. It really is only 10 buttons for that.
Sure.
And
Yeah,
then
it's
on
10
top,
numbers and then
right.
extraneous.
And then on top, you do see what looks like a six, it could be 6 digits on top. Yeah.
On the
So,
LCD
okay.
display.
It's an amateur UHF transceiver. It has 14 channels on it. We don't really need to know about the power supply and stuff like that. It weighs 400 grams, you know, 14.11
Wow.
ounces. You know, do they talk here about the fact that it has a scrambler on it? I don't know. It talks about high powered settings. You can get a different types of char what chargers you can use for it. It was manufactured during between 1987 and 1989 in Japan, and it's been discontinued, obviously, because you know, too many terrorists were using it, or some other reason like that. But
Some
no,
other
it doesn't.
reason.
That's some other reason. Yeah, so they don't mention here anything about why, you know, how it actually works with the scrambler.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know enough
I
about these things to figure out all the specs.
have a pretty similar radio. It's just a handheld transceiver for use as a backup for flying, and its configuration is broadly similar. And the only thing you're using on mine, the only thing you're using the keypad for is just to type in the digits for a radio frequency. So,
Oh, okay.
118.5 megahertz, that kind of thing. There's no the buttons don't sort of transmit to anything or really control anything other than, sorry, the numerical buttons in particular just say, this is the frequency I want to go to, and rather than turning a tuning knob, you just dial the numbers directly.
Oh, okay. So you've never used it to try and take over an airport?
I really feel like the statute of limitations prohibits me from answering that in full.
Okay,
So on the
that's
advice of
fair.
counsel, I'm just gonna leave that one alone.
That's fair. That's fair. All right. So every Monday we have a segment called McLean Monday, where my guests will give their top five Bruce Willis performances. So Hal, why don't you tell us what you got there? Start with number five and work your way up.
Okay, so this was a challenge for me because I feel like
Well, I
there's
don't make things
some.
easy. Come
Oh, that's
on.
right. I was thinking of another show. I was thinking of the Easy Show.
Yeah, there you go.
Just because it's my number one
No, start with
is
number
very
five.
clear.
Okay,
I know
no,
I'm going to
okay.
start with number
All right.
five. I'm just
Sorry, sorry.
mapping
No, I
it
thought
out
you were
for you.
jumping the gun again. You're starting with number
But
one. So, okay.
there's kind of a. I'm not saying everything else is tied for second place, but I could take probably three, four, and five and switch them around in any given order. But having said that, number five, I went with Looper.
Okay.
So I thought that was an odd but sort of watchable, although I must confess, actually largely kind of forgettable sci-fi movie, but I thought it was fun. Number four will, I'm sure, lose me a lot of friends when I say Hudson Hawk.
Okay. No, why should it look? Someone a few weeks ago had that as their number one. So you're
As their
good.
number one, really.
Yeah, you're good.
That's that was just I love the byplay with Bruce Willis and Danny Aiello in that movie, and I love the soundtrack and the gimmick of using the timing of songs to plan these heists.
Yes.
Number three, Unbreakable. Number two, Fifth Element. And number one, the first Die Hard. There's just no question about that one.
Okay, very cool. All right, thank you very much for that, Hal. So Hal,
My pleasure.
you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you, where they can find Hal Bryan.
Sure. Well, as this is airing, Starting on the week of July 24th, you can find me all over the EAA Air Venture Convention Grounds. So here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, every year we hold the largest aviation event of any kind anywhere in the world. And 650,000 people, 10 to 12,000 airplanes, and a week-long, just amazing event across about something like 1,800 acres. So again, as this is airing, if you're for some reason you're listening and you're on the Air Venture grounds at the same time, I'm everywhere. So just flag me down and say hello.
Well, everyone's in Oshkosh this week, don't you know that?
That's where else would you be?
That's right.
That's what it feels like. And so, yeah, again, as this is airing, I'm in the middle of, you know, of about 3 weeks with no breaks and, you know, 18, 20 hour days and loving every second of it, even if my body's a little tired. Otherwise, you mentioned at the beginning, a podcast that I did with the inimitable Jim O'Kane, the Rocketeer Minute. So you can go to rocketeerminute.com and find episodes there, or find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Audible. You can ask Alexa to play the Rocketeer Minute, all that kind of good stuff. And I also do another podcast through work, through the Experimental Aircraft Association. I'm not on every episode. There's a few of us that rotate in and out as hosts, but that one's called The Green Dot. And you can find that at inspire.eaa.org.
All right. Very cool. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on your podcatcher you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Your Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little village.